Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back to another edition of the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call. And yes, this is the show where we talk about exactly that. Most of you know by now the title for the show comes from Revelation 18:4, but it's not unique to there. That one says, come out of her, my people, so that you don't partake of the sins and therefore don't partake of the plagues. I've contended for a while the plagues are increasingly obvious. There are, of course, a lot of other admonitions in Scripture like touch not the unclean thing, be separate, and so forth. Basically, what it's saying is when you see really nasty stuff that's being done, don't participate with it. And yet, on the other hand, of course, we have other questions, and that's the one I'm going to spend some time on today. Can we or can we not participate? Well, it turns out that at least when it comes to what was once called trial by jury, and I'm going to suggest, as I have many times in the past, that what we have in the formerly free constitutional republics is no longer trial by jury. It's kind of a jury-rigged trial. Yeah, you've heard the jokes, because I've said them, others have too. Voir dire is the process of jury tampering. They don't call it that, of course, but that's basically what it amounts to. Last 3 weeks ago, I did a show on this particular topic, and not for the first time, of course. The idea of voir dire and what it is that we need to understand about trial by jury so that when you're called, if you're called to serve on a jury, you understand things like what John Adams once wrote. Other people, too, have said almost the identical thing. First Supreme Court Justice John Jay, it is not only the right but the obligation, the duty of the juror to know and to judge both the facts and the law according to his own conscience. And of course the and the law part is now verboten, and given that that was the entire history, the reason why the trial by jury concept is put in the Constitution at least twice, if you include the grand juries in the Fifth Amendment, it's more than that. But we've come so far from that. Again, that's part of the reason why I've talked about it. What I want to do today is to start off with a personal story. Part of the reason why I did that show a few weeks back was because I received a summons for jury duty. It was for this morning. And so as a result, I knew that I probably wouldn't be finished in time to do my regular news show today. As it turns out, I did kind of put up at least a partial show, and I wasn't sure at all about this show. And obviously, I'm in time and had a chance to do a little bit of preparation. And so we're going to talk about lessons learned from the latest interaction with what now passes for the legal system, the so-called criminal justice system. Now, if I forgive me if I let a little bit of cynicism, you regular listeners will know it's honestly earned, slip through in the discussion today. So here's the story. I showed up at 8:30 a.m. at the county courthouse in the small, local, little, very much rural county where I am domiciled nowadays. There was the usual introduction, lots and lots of people there, even in a small county. And literally, part of the reason why I put up the shows in advance and made sure that there was a rerun schedule for this one is because I didn't know how long it was going to take. I know one thing for sure, and I've made this clear as well. If you understand, particularly if you are honest and you tell the court what you know about the right and obligation of the juror to judge the facts and the law, I can guarantee you one thing. Now, I don't claim to know for all of the states, but I've certainly never seen a counterexample over the last few years. I'm very familiar, at least... Well, let's just say probably over a dozen incidents here now in the state of Colorado, including the famous case of Laura Creho back in Gilpin County a number of years ago, and I interviewed her on several occasions. Exactly what is being done and how it is that judges essentially are saying now they're going to, one way or another, by hook or by crook, and that's the key, require jurors to understand they are to judge the facts only. Und the law as I give it to you. Oops, a little cynicism slipped through there again. And the law as I give it to you. Now, that's the point, of course, at which I would take objection. And my thought processes, and this is what I outlined in that show a few weeks ago, is that we need to understand the quotes, be able to lay these things out to say, no, this is an honest response. I will not, I cannot take an oath like that because it is anathema to the concept of what trial by jury once meant. It's anathema to the Constitution. And for crying out loud, if you know better, why would you take an oath to do something which is just plain wrong? Now, furthermore, I contend that there are any number of people, I myself have taken this oath, most people who have been in the armed services or law enforcement or of an elected office or anything else have taken an oath that variously, depending upon which state you're in and so forth, says, I will preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. As you've heard me say lately, we had a whole bunch of Congress traitors put their hand on a Bible, or in some cases not even a Bible, and lie through their teeth because they had no intention to do that. And in fact, they are traitors domestic, intending to make war against the people, the citizenry of the United States. I have a real problem with that, as you know. So for all of those reasons, again, I encourage people, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any, and the jury duty is, in fact, a very important thing. People ought to want to serve. And the more you know about it, and the more capable you are of doing so, the less likely, to the point of impossibility, that you are will be allowed to serve. So with all of that, the rest of the story here, I think, is kind of educational. Certainly wasn't for was for me to see the process of how they go about eliminating the informed while making sure that the ignorant stay that way. There are all kinds of indications as you go through it. For example, and part of this doesn't surprise me, sounds reasonable. That's always the way unconstitutional infringements begin. They sound reasonable. For example, jurors are told, no phone calls, turn off your cell phones, but more importantly, you're not allowed to do a web search. You're not allowed to understand anything more about the case. Well, part of that, we've heard the rationale for so long that it doesn't surprise us. But they certainly don't also want people going and looking up the statutes online. That is verboten. Again, the key words, the facts only, says the judge, and the law as I give it to you. Now, I have told this story before. This is my second time in this particular county of going down there and seeing how this process works. I've been to other counties in the past, certainly had loved ones, friends, relatives, listeners, and others talk about their experiences in various counties, not only in Colorado, but nationwide as well. And the key thing is, especially in Colorado, this verbiage is universal. You will judge the facts only and the law as I give it to you. Now, the previous guy, several years ago, last time I was in the county courthouse here, literally asked people as they came up, will you take that oath to do that? And I was chomping at the bit. I never was called on that particular occasion, even though I was itching to. And as it turns out, that's probably the worst case, because now you have to sit through the whole thing and bite your tongue while they essentially find a whole bunch of people who are ignorant of the obligations of a juror and are willing to sit through whatever kind of a railroad job is coming. That particular case was especially irritating, although I don't know all of the facts, didn't sit through the trial. But the fellow was charged with a violation of an unconstitutional, even by Colorado statute, gun control violation. So, yeah, I would have loved to have been able to sit on that one, because there is a case that is literally begging for jury nullification. This one, however, I wasn't sure at the time. I had heard and I'd actually talked about and railed against this particular statute when it was first being talked about in Colorado, at least when it became public a few years ago, and I'll come to that in just a minute. But what this particular judge did, this was not the regular judge. This was almost like a roving judge that came for this particular situation. I wonder if they had him lined up for a particular reason. That would be interesting to research, too. I haven't had time to look into that. But he didn't do the same thing. In other words, he did not use this verbiage about the facts only as and the law as I give it to you until later. And he occasionally asked a juror. Now, eventually, this time, I was called. And he was, again, as I said, a little bit more subtle. And they have a list of regular things that the prospective jurors, by the way, they start with a pool of significantly more than 12, and they warn you that, some so-called jury trials, now we don't bother with 12 anymore, or anything that used to even remotely be associated with trial by jury. Might be as few as 3. But in this case, it was a felony trial, so there were going to be 12 jurors. They had 22 people that they originally called up, and I was way down the list, but still in the original set. There was a list of questions that were given to everybody, your name, your age, where do you reside, how long you've been here, what's your occupation, your educational level, you know, what do you do for fun, all kinds of things. And I went through all of that, made the point that I do teach Scripture, and that I do a radio show on current events, and yes, I even mentioned I discuss constitutional issues, as well as a couple of other things. I'm a pilot, obviously, and a radio amateur, ham radio operator, and so forth. I was watching the judge for his reaction, and essentially, he asked at that point, I was not the first one that was at least allowed to hear this verbiage, but I was specifically waiting until asked. And the terminology came up. The facts only. Will you judge the facts only and the law as I give it to you? Now, if he hadn't asked me, I would have mentioned it and said, hey, that's part of the questioning here. Now, part of that, of course, is because I want to make sure that there is no question that I am being upfront. I'm not trying to lie to anybody, to confuse anybody about the fact that I do know what the law says. I encourage everybody to understand what a juror is supposed to be and to do. I didn't use the terminology that you may have heard, things like jury nullification, but we'll get to that in just a minute. The key thing is I was surprised, and here comes the subtlety. I was not immediately dismissed. And as it turned out, it was pretty close to the time when once all of the original 22 and those that were eliminated for various other reasons, and I'll mention a couple of those here in a minute, were let go, and they had 22. Well, then there will be a break. So we took a 15-minute break, during which time people can go out and make a bathroom break and the like. And I began to realize that there was a whole lot of subtlety going on here. One of those things, of course, is I wasn't dismissed immediately before the break because you could almost hear the danger, danger Will Robinson alarms going off on that score, right? Dismiss me, and then probably a couple people might, after that particular discussion where I did, in fact, quote Adams and made the point that, no, I would not take such an oath, and I wanted the judge to know it. In the interest of full disclosure, I said, I want to be clear on this score. So I would have expected there might have been some questions had I been dismissed, because that's like a red flag. Oh, hey, if I want to get out, right, here is how you do it. So I didn't expect that, but I was a little bit surprised. How they did it, though, after the break, was really educational. So here we go. After the break, we came back in, and at this point, there's the introduction, and the district attorney, the charging individual, is going to question the prospective jurors, after which the defendant will. Now, in this case, there was another interesting factoid here, and that is that the defendant was pro se. In other words, this is a fellow who refused an attorney. By the way, that's not to be confused with counsel, as some of you know. Counsel is different, but these are bar attorneys, and of course, as most folks know, the attorney is an officer of the court. That is different than counsel. And I'm not necessarily bad-mouthing all attorneys. Before I did this show, I got on the Internet, did some research, which I'll describe in a bit more detail here in a minute, and was able to talk to a very nice fellow who was an attorney. I had some input on what the things are that I'll talk about today. Actually, he considered coming on. It was kind of late notice, obviously, and I didn't necessarily expect that he would want to or be able to do that, so I won't give anybody's names. But I did appreciate his candor and his discussion with me. So all of those things are kind of part of the equation here. What I'm leading up to is, as I listened to the questions and the way that the district attorney was phrasing the questions, it was obvious what she was looking at and who she wanted to get rid of and what kinds of things she wanted to kind of short circuit during this process of jury tampering or voir dire. She began by asking some questions like this one. Do you think there are too many laws? And some other things that we'll come back to in a second. Now, what was kind of interesting to me is during this period of time, I almost felt like, oh, I think I'm being goaded here a little bit. You know, if you think there's too many laws in America, raise your hand. Now, I didn't raise my hand. Several people did raise their hands, and they escaped that particular trap, at least as far as I was able to see right there. I'm sure they made the list for later challenges. But in any case, I didn't raise my hand. My rationale is that it's not a matter of there being too many laws, and I would have answered that had I been asked. So I didn't raise my hand. No, I don't think there's so much too many laws. There's no doubt a whole lots of laws. It's the laws that are unconstitutional that are the problem. So it's not too many laws. It's too many really bad, unconstitutional laws. And if you know what 16 AMJUR 177 is, because I've talked about that too, it's an unconstitutional law. It's no law at all. All right, so I held my tongue, bit my tongue for a while. There was a related question where a fellow who has already announced himself as a former law enforcement officer who raised his hand said there are too many laws. And he was asked by both the judge and the DA, well, you know, what kind of things are you talking about here? He said, well, for example, the Second Amendment shall not be infringed. There's a whole lot of laws that seem to infringe that. But he was circumspect. Oh, there are some certainly okay infringements. So I guess that didn't immediately disqualify him. By the way, I'm sure that the pro se fellow on the other side of the courtroom is listening to this too and thinking, all right, these are the people I would probably like to have, but unfortunately we didn't get quite that far. All right, at some point, the DA pushed it just far enough that I did feel, okay, now I have to raise my hand. So I raised my hand in response to some questioning along these lines. I'll just say it that way. And, well, let me mention one other thing first. She did say also, make a big deal about this fella is pro se, and he's avoided doing what he probably should have done, which is to get counsel. This is, of course, his right, but will you hold him to the same standards that you hold me to? And again, on this one, had I been asked, I would have said, wait a minute, there are some differences here, but I'm not going to belabor the point. She is an officer of the court. He is not. She ought to be held to a higher standard. And normally I would expect the judge to offer some leeway to a pro se defendant. And indeed he should, but I didn't see that part. But in any case, eventually I did raise my hand, and there were several other hands up at the same time. And she said, she looked at me and she said pointedly, don't worry, I will get back to you. So I kind of already knew where things were headed. It was obvious before the break even. And at the point when she finally did get back around to me, the judge, too, chimed in on this score, and he asked some pointed questions about, do you feel like you can just override the law and you just by your own opinion can say what the law is and what isn't? And I said, no, I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying that there are certain things that are pretty clear, like shall not be infringed, as that former LEO over there has already pointed out. And yes, since John Adams and the first Supreme Court Justice John Jay and Thomas Jefferson and a whole bunch of others have talked about the point of the juror having not only the right but the obligation to do so. Well, okay, just answer yes or no. So the answer is no. And I indicated furthermore, as he asked me something else, so I answered a little bit more. There are things that are clearly, without question, obvious to even the laity, those casual non-lawyers among us, unconstitutional. And if I see something that looks completely and totally unconstitutional, A, I'm going to ask questions, and B, yeah, I'm going to say that if it's a bad law, in fact, and I've already mentioned AMJUR, it's no law at all. So at this point, he actually said the word jury nullification. And you know what juror nullification is? I said, certainly I do. And that was, at least once upon a time, the essence, one of the key points of trial by jury. And then at this point I mentioned, and understand, it's not just the supreme law of the land. I will make a similar understanding based on my knowledge of the Bible, Scripture, the point of what the nation was once founded upon. Oh, okay. Well, at that point, right, we have the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, DA looks at judge, judge looks at DA, dismissed for cause. Now, hopefully, and this is kind of where I come down on this situation after the fact, hopefully there were a whole lot of people in the courtroom that maybe learned some things from the exchange. You never know exactly what seeds will be planted and the like, but one of the things that became clear to me, and I thought about it especially afterwards. But I can truthfully say this, all right? So here's where I want to go, and part of the reason why I want to spend some time talking about this personal experience. I can truthfully say that the specific case that I will talk about today that was being tried in this case was a felony. A guy was being charged literally for a violation of, they did not name the statute at that point, but I looked it up and I'm pretty sure this is what it was. Colorado Revised Statute, CRS 18-8-306, attempt to influence a public servant. How does that sound? Attempt to influence a public servant. Now, if somebody says something to you, that's not a crime. There was all this talk about how we're all equal under the law and so forth, but some people are obviously more equal than others. And it had already arisen by this point that what the guy was charged with was that he had made some kind of an attempt to influence a judge right there in this particular district, somewhere in the San Luis Valley. I'd heard the name. I don't know the individual. There were several people, and I've already mentioned this, who were released because they did stand up and say, I know the judge. I've had dealings with this judge. Quite frankly, I don't trust her. Oh, okay, well, you're out of here. And it was surprising to me how many of those there were. But here's where I'm headed. Okay, I started to say, I can truthfully say, I wanted to see the evidence. I don't know what this fellow said. And I'm perfectly willing to sit on a jury and to hear the evidence and objectively make a decision about the evidence and see whether or not there is a crime there. And yes, I do also understand that I have not only the right but the obligation to look at the evidence and the law. And if the law itself, as applied in this case, is a violation of any number of things like the First Amendment or some others we'll get to, then yes, I will, in fact, vote to acquit based on the fact that a bogus law, an unconstitutional law, is no law at all. So I want to form an opinion on the facts, yes, and the law. And adios. But again, as is so often the case, one thinks about certain things afterwards, particularly in more detail. And it was the scope and the slant of the questions that were being asked by the DA as I sat there for those last, probably 10 or 15 minutes at all before being dismissed after the break, that certainly clarified a lot of things in my mind. Now, I've already mentioned the fact that a number of people had a problem with the judge, but that's not the issue here. The issue is, what did this guy say, and what did he do that was suddenly so criminal that he's being charged with a felony? And it does not seem to have been, I will kill you, or anything of that sort. Again, I don't know the facts, but I have an opinion that was kind of formed as I listened to the questions, right? Are there too many laws that are going on? The various ways she phrased things and focused on certain things made it clear that she was clearly trying to short-circuit where the defendant was obviously going to go, his free speech. His free speech ability to say something to a so-called public servant. And here's the key, folks, and this is the question that I would have liked to have asked had it gone that far. How is it that we can have free speech in one case, but if I was to say something to a juror in this room or to any number of people, that's not a crime. But if I say it to a protected person, a so-called public servant, who you'd think ought to be used to having their opinions attempted to be influenced by a member of the public? Well, something is horribly wrong there. That's suddenly a felony. So what I'm saying is my opinion of the nature of the alleged crime began to change, to clarify, as I saw the tenor of the questions. Almost like the DA knew that even people who didn't know that a juror is supposed to be able to judge the facts and the law, might start to say, hey, this sounds like a really bad law, a bogus law. And that was what seemed to really be needed to be nipped in the bud. Now, there's one other interesting element of this, and I'll mention it right as we go to the break. This was the only charge against this fellow. Now, normally, as you know, the DA likes to rank up whole bunches of charges. Charge him with this, charge him with that, charge him with a whole laundry list of things so that we can nail him with something. Oh, we've got something to plea bargain with, too. But we're past all of that here, so it certainly seems like there's something else going on here. And we'll talk about that when we get back.
On my knees and pray. It's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Cold or cold.
Welcome back to the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call. And if you joined us a bit late, I had jury duty this morning, went in, and I'm describing at least some of the lessons learned at this point. And what I was leading up to as we went to the break was the actual claim that the defendant was being charged with. And I looked it up afterwards. Now, remember, the prospective juror is not supposed to know what the law really says or doesn't say, because they're not even supposed to know that if it's an unconstitutional statute or it violates, even common sense or any number of things, they have the right and even the obligation to nullify it. Yep, there's that evil term. I didn't use it, but the judge did. Jury nullification. He did, however, read enough of the charging statute that I was able to, after I was released from the you can't find out requirement, did go and look it up. So I've mentioned this already. It seems to be that the fellow was being charged under Colorado Revised Statutes. This is the 2016 version I'm looking at, 18-8-306, and it says the following. Any person who attempts to influence any public servant by means of deceit or by threat of violence or economic reprisal against any person or property with the intent thereby to alter or affect the public servant's decision, vote, opinion, or action concerning any matter which is to be considered or performed by him or the agency or body of which he is a member, commits a Class 4 felony. Whoa, say what? Attempts to influence a public servant, including by economic reprisal, in an attempt to alter his vote, decision, opinion, or actions, is now a felony? Immediately I say, well, that does sound just a little bit like something that really needs to be nullified. As I was listening to this and listening to the tenor of the questions, I kept hearing these words running through my head. Void for vagueness. Void for vagueness. In other words, folks, this kind of statute basically is just ripe for what I have already railed about in other places, selective enforcement. How dare you say something to this particular public servant? I will nail your you-know-what to the wall. Now, see, the public servant can do that, can charge you with a felony. But if you suggest... And let's be clear here. If you suggest, if you do this, Mr. Judge or Ms. Public Servant, I'll make sure you don't get reelected. Uh-oh, you're threatening their job, aren't you? You might be threatening the way they vote on something. If you vote this way, in other words, let me give you a real example. I'll commit a felony, right? Oh, I got to be careful, don't I? Because when you no longer have the right to free speech, you got to watch it. Let's suppose, hypothetically, there was some criminally negligent, lying criminal. Did I say criminal? Yeah, it bears repeating. Who puts their hand on a Bible, swears to preserve, protect, and defend a constitution that, you know, blankety-blank and well, they despise because they intend, as New Jersey just did, to steal people's property, to declare it a felony for them to even own something that the Constitution actually says shall not be infringed, all right? Now, if I threaten to say, I'm going to go public, I'm going to never vote against you, I'll make sure you don't win re-election. Well, heck, I might even see if I can't get you impeached, you criminal, lying, oath-breaker, you. Folks, that's a felony. And it's a felony in more than one state. Isn't that interesting? It's kind of ironic, but I don't think surprising, how many of these really bad statutes seem to just kind of crop up with almost identical wording in state after state after state. Almost like they have the beta tests here and then say, let's push it through in a whole bunch of other places and see how many things we can criminalize in order to control the peons. So again, this was the thing that I looked up afterwards and did the research and, like I said, made a call to an attorney. I found quite a few interesting things online, and basically we're going to go through some of those. But the emphasis of the DA, remember, was that some speech can be prohibited. Now, let me emphasize, I don't know what the defendant allegedly said. But if it was a threat against the judge's job for malfeasance or for breach of office or breach of her oath, I got no problem with it, quite frankly, and you betcha. I would say there's no crime there. That is a law that needs nullifying for sure. On the other hand, why was the guy only charged with this one statute? If something is, already a crime, by the way, it's even a crime in Scripture, like bribery. Trying to bribe a judge, that's a crime. Trying to bribe a public servant, an officer of the law or of the court, or unless they're a lawyer, I guess if they're a lawyer, paying them, that doesn't constitute bribery. But in any case, these things, actual bribery, extortion, are already crimes. Furthermore, if I threaten somebody with specific bodily harm, now when I grew up, that was called assault. They've changed the meaning of the words there. We used to say assault was the threat, battery was doing it. You threaten somebody, I'm going to beat the you-know-what out of you, and then the battery is you do it. But those were crimes too. Assault and battery has been a crime. It's a felony if it's a serious threat carried out by a battery that's a serious violence. On the other hand, I'd have to ask, if it's just, I'll see you lose your job, or wait till I tell the public this story? There's a whole different element there. Now, there's this element in the statute too. Doesn't seem like what was going on here was deceit either. The emphasis that you look in some of the criminal cases seems to be if somebody lies to a cop, officer, where's the fire? No, my wife is sick. I was trying to get home. Don't give me a ticket. Oh, okay. Well, and that's a lie? I guess that's a felony now. And that's been pointed out. Oh, it's better just to pay the ticket than to get the now felony. And it occurred to me as I was reading that, well, wait a minute. It's okay for some people to lie. As you know, there are certain people who get to run for public office that can commit treason and have email servers that are absolutely they're not unconstitutional. They're just a violation of felonies. And you'd think, for example, that a Secretary of State would know better than to commit acts that might jeopardize national security or worse, result in bribery and extortion. But obviously some people are more equal than others, and certain people can lie to the FBI. Others clearly can't. But isn't it interesting that lying to the FBI, even if they misrecollect on a 302 form, well, that's a crime, again, for some folks, but not others. Selective enforcement, yeah, I'll admit it bugs me. Other people get to take a hammer to a disk drive, and that's just fine. I've already said this. As I looked at this statute and read it, and it talks about a threat of violence or economic reprisal against any person or property with the intent to what? Alter their vote, decision, opinion, or actions? Good grief, give me a break. That's void for vagueness on its face. So, I'll say it again. Why is saying the very same thing to me or to any other juror with the intent? Well, think about it. On a jury, what's the point of jury deliberations? Is this a public servant? Certainly sounds like it could be a public servant when they're acting. By the way, the statute even says doesn't have to be an employee. Is trying to change someone's opinion by arguing forcefully? It's ripe for selective enforcement. The whole point of void for vagueness and various statutes being cast down because they are ridiculous, overly broad, vague, or whatever, ought to be a consideration for jurors that understand their obligations to judge the law as well. Now, I found online a copy of the likely Colorado jury instructions for this crime. Remember, the judge will tell you what you're allowed to consider. The elements of the crime of the attempt to influence a public servant are, number one, the defendant, number two, in the state of Colorado at or about the date and time and place charged, three, attempted to influence any public servant by means of deceit or by these various threats. Violence, okay, that's already a crime under different statutes. Or economic reprisal. I'll see you lose your job. Boy, if that's what it is, again, I got a problem. With the intent to alter or affect, five, that public servant's decision, vote, opinion, and so forth and so on. After considering all the evidence, it says, and only the facts, you get to judge that, I will give you the law. If you decide the prosecution has proven each of these elements beyond a reasonable doubt, you should find the defendant guilty of attempt to influence a public servant. If you decide the prosecution hasn't made the case, they can be innocent. Wait a minute. How about if you simply decide this law is a, well, can I say it? A crock of you-know-what. No, that is why some of us are dismissed. Now, this is what I thought was particularly interesting. As I was preparing for the show here and looking online, I found not one but several different stories, including the WAPO, and I'm not a big fan of the WAPO, but they did actually report a case that is going to be referenced in this other piece here. Seals v. McBee comes out of Louisiana. And in that case, I found a piece from the Baton Rouge, Louisiana paper called The Advocate. And it's dated literally just about 1 year ago this week. And the headline says it all. Is it a crime to threaten an officer's job? One federal judge called the Louisiana law, and if you read the statute, folks, it's almost, like I said, word for word identical. But this federal judge can actually read the law. I guess he can tell you what it should be. It's obviously unconstitutional, he said. Now, if you remember, that's exactly the terminology I used to the judge in this case before being dismissed for cause. Certain things we can read and we can see are obviously unconstitutional. Turns out, though, the article says, not one but two federal judges have called into question the Louisiana law that makes it a felony crime to threaten a public official, saying the law is, and here I will quote, unconstitutionally broad and potentially hampers speech protected by the First Amendment. What? Does that still apply? Wow, could have fooled me. In the past several months, one judge found the statute unconstitutional, while a second judge strongly criticized it in a court ruling. And let me say it again, folks. This is the point of jury nullification. An unconstitutional statute is void from the day that it was put forward. You don't have to wait for a judge to declare it to be unconstitutional. If you understand what the obligation of a juror is to judge a bad law and call it what it is, there shouldn't be any convictions under it. Now, again, I find it greatly interesting that this fellow wasn't charged with any other kind of crime, if in fact he had really threatened this judge or indeed the next door neighbor. That's a crime. There would have been a reason for charging him. Why this? I don't know the answer to that. I didn't get to sit on the jury and hear it. But all of these cases, as the piece here in The Advocate, grew out of incidents where, in this case, law enforcement officers arrested somebody, at least in part, for the crime of threatening their jobs. One of them said the following. This is literally out of the court transcript. I'm calling your supervisor. I'm going to have your job. I'm going to get you fired. Octon, you will go to jail for that. U.S. District Court Judge Chief Brian Jackson, in a Livingston Parish case, wrote, quote, a statute that criminalizes entirely nonviolent threats to an officer's employment is so patently and obviously unconstitutional that no reasonable officer could believe it to have been valid. Time and again, he continued, the Supreme Court has upheld the right of citizens to criticize the police. Unquote. What a concept, folks. You can actually talk back to your betters if they're acting under color of law. Gee, does that even apply to a judge that's acting under color of law? Well, not in some places. Here's the irony, right? If they manage to keep people off the jury who know exactly why the law is unconstitutional on its face, void for vagueness, obviously broad, patently unconstitutional, they're not going to sit on the jury. Now, I'll admit, I did have a little twinge of guilt, right? What is the right thing to do in this case? I'm not going to lie. I find it morally objectionable to lie. I am going to tell them the truth, knowing full well that as long as the United States is a post-constitutional republic where trial by jury isn't worth the paper it's printed on, I'll never sit on a jury. But at least we can talk about it, for now. And of course, if crimes like this aren't put down by jurors who know what the difference is between a threat and somebody saying, look, I'll have your job for this, we're in a whole heap of trouble. Again, I'll say it, this is the point of jury nullification. This is why Thomas Jefferson said, I consider trial by jury the only anchor yet devised by the mind of man, by which a government may be held to the principles of its constitution. And now we see why it is so blankety-blanking important that jurors who know that will not be allowed anywhere near a jury box. Now, I've told the joke before, right? You've heard me say this, but I guess it bears repeating here because they're working on all of these. The old joke goes like this. You'll see it on bumper stickers. At least you used to, but probably it's a crime now to have this bumper sticker. There are four boxes in a free society. Soap, ballot, jury, cartridge. Use in this order. All right, if you've never heard the joke, it does bear a little bit of explanation. Soap box, of course, refers to free speech. Ballot box refers to, well, back when we used to have paper ballots and it wasn't quite as easy to rig elections and you didn't have Florida officials basically being caught and essentially saying, hey, what are you going to do? Jury box, we just talked about. The jury box has been undermined, I will contend, for decades. But we're at the point now where they're not even hiding it anymore. And the only jurors that are going to be allowed to sit in that jury box are, dare I say it, ignorant of the whole concept of trial by jury. And in a lot of cases, they did say the words in this particular case today, but in a lot of cases, they'll call it jury trial, where jury is an adjective, meaning as in jury rigged. It's not trial by jury, not in the remotely constitutional sense. By the way, in the constitutional sense, you go back and look at the history, voir dire is about asking if somebody is lying, literally lying about something specifically material. It's not to be used. It wasn't historically to be used to say, do you know the defendant? Well, yeah, I've known John Smith for 30 years. The man is as honest as the day is long. Who better to judge that individual as to the content of the allegations against him than somebody who's known him and knows, because they are one of his peers, what's likely to be true and not true? See, we've moved so far from all of these things that it's almost not even funny anymore. It's why voir dire as jury tampering is worse than a joke. But what's happened here now, and I mentioned this in the story and the show that I did a few weeks ago, I would encourage folks to go back and listen to this. There were several Gilpin County judges in particular that actually wrote an article for the Judge's Journal prior to the attempt to hijack and make an example out of Laura Creho, that they were looking for a case to overturn the movement for jury nullification. Because just like what happened with the Fugitive Slave Act, and indeed other cases in U.S. history before, where people realized that bad law, in fact, can be nullified, and that ought to happen with New Jersey's bogus firearms confiscation law, and California's laws on about 100 different topics, and a whole bunch of others that are planned. How about these red flag orders? Somebody thinks that you might be a danger? Well, let's just go steal their guns. We'll worry about it later. All of these things, folks, are anathema to a free society. But if we don't have a jury box where people actually know their rights and their obligations, what's the fourth box? The cartridge box. John F. Kennedy put it this way, back before they offed him. Those who would make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. I've mentioned, as long as I've been doing radio, that the entire purpose of government, according to the founders in the Declaration of Independence, is to secure these rights. Which rights? Those God-given rights, life, liberty, and property, that were, well, given by him, not by any earthly power. And that the only purpose of government, again, was to secure these rights, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. When a government becomes abusive of these ends, in other words, doing exactly what we're seeing today, they have the right to alter or abolish it. Well, that is until they're shut up, locked out of a jury box, disarmed, and then carted off to, well, any place Big Brother wants to cart them off to. These are serious issues. There's things that I think really need to be discussed. And that's why I think it is important to, when you get a jury summons, to go down, understand your rights, understand what the law is and isn't. And you do have a right to judge the facts and the law according to your own conscience. Your understanding of the supreme law of the land, yes, that not only means the Constitution, but also Scripture. Thou shalt not murder. Hey, if I see a case where somebody murders under color of law, and the law says, oh, they get to walk because they're an FBI agent, or they get to walk because they were stealing that guy's firearms at 4 o'clock in the morning, didn't need a stinking warrant, and they got shot for it, we have a great need to understand what the law is and what the law isn't. And yeah, as you might suspect, this really bugs me. It gets under my skin, and it is vital that we go and talk and make our understandings clear. Even if you don't get seated on the jury, folks, if nothing else, I hope and I pray that there were some seeds planted early this afternoon, and some people that are thinking about it. And I didn't hear what that defendant did or what his plans are. But I certainly hope that if he is going to go pro se here, that he can understand and look up some of these cases, like the one I just mentioned, and make sure that he points that out to a jury, even if they're ignorant. They do have, and now they've heard it at least, a right to judge the facts and the law. I really do hope and pray the defendant was listening, and that he will point that out to them, because the judge will probably try to shut him up, but he'll have a tough time. Now, I want to close with this. I want to just mention a couple of other things, because obviously this goes from top to bottom, this issue in society. I'm looking at a piece having to do with the James Howard Kunstler put it, a piece in the New York Times, their front page salvo that he mentioned with the headline, FBI opened inquiry into whether Trump was secretly working on behalf of Russia. The purpose of this blast, he said, was to establish the high and grave seriousness of Robert Mueller's Russia collusion investigation. Sick. Witch hunt is really the proper term. Because otherwise, that yarn has completely shed its credibility. Note, he says, and I've mentioned this on the news, it was about paragraph 9 in the story before the Times reporters got around to mentioning, quote, no evidence has emerged publicly that Mr. Trump was secretly in contact with or took direction from Russian government officials. Now, there's plenty of evidence that Hillary Clinton did so in exchange for all kinds of bucks. That would be called bribery. The Clinton Foundation, Uranium One. But I guess, again, some animals are more equal than others. The idea, says Kunstler, was to simply drag this teetering narrative back on stage. And the 60 Minutes show took a particular joy. Interlocutor Steve Croft delighted in pointing out to the chairman, the new chairman of the House Oversight Committee, that the House can investigate any old thing. So the new greatest the new greatest show on earth climaxed, writes Kunstler, in an orgiastic, orgasmic impeachment operation, and Mr. Croft could hardly contain his glee. Now, here's where I'm heading. The two-year smokescreen to cover the collective you-know-whats of the rogue leadership in the Department of Justice and its stepchild, the FBI, who deliberately and repeatedly broke the law in dishonestly pursuing a way to annul the 2016 election result, well, it, to put it mildly, reflects darkly on a whole bunch of things. But what's the connection here, right? If you point this out, we know that there's supposed to be whistleblower protection laws. FBI just raided a fellow within the last couple of weeks, showing him who was boss and that the protection of the whistleblower law, doesn't matter for squat. It's not worth the paper that's printed on. But what are we seeing? We're seeing it even all the way down to the county level. Big Brother's bureaucrats and those who toe the line, those who are called public servants, even if they're not, enjoy privileges, protections that you peons aren't allowed to have. Whether we're talking about the right of a judge to keep and bear arms when others are prohibited, ask yourself how easy it is to get one in Chicago or New York, right? And the fact that if somebody dares to point out that you're a criminal, violating your oath of office, and you ought to be in jail rather than drawing a salary and a pension. Ah, are you threatening me to change my opinion? Are you trying to get me to clean up my act and remember that I put my hand on a Bible and took an oath before God that I've been gang raping? Yeah. Well, folks, that is a felony now. And if honest people don't recognize that even pointing that out with what was once called their right to free speech has now been criminalized, along with your right to do anything else to say no to Big Brother's tyranny, we're in a whole heap of trouble. And it really is getting ugly, and it's getting late. So, again, I'll say it. If you don't know your rights, if you don't speak up for them, if you don't understand them, you don't have any. And yes, it's vital to know who we serve. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.